Hey, everybody, and welcome back for another episode of the... Okay, whatever you're doing, don't do that again.
I didn't know we were firing up.
Yeah, I just said you ready.
You usually count down from fucking 60.
All right, well, 10, 1, go. Starting over. Hey, everybody, and welcome back for another episode of The Overlay, a poker podcast brought to you by CCG Poker and Paramount Poker down in beautiful Houston, Texas. Hey, Brando, what's going on?
What up? This might be the first time we've ever had to retake.
Yeah. We did. I'm not even leaving in there just so everybody can know that.
That you count down from 60 every time before
yeah,
we start.
Yeah, it's that really funny PLO joke. Man, I got PLO on the brain. It's that joke from The Office where Dwight's like, okay, count us down, Dwight. And he goes, 30. 29 goes, 30? Why would you start with 30? He's like, 3, 2, 1, go. And then they turn on the lights. I do it every time. It's 63 episodes in, and I'm still doing the same joke. And Brandon found it not funny after maybe one episode.
Well, yeah, he's like, are you ready? I'm like, yeah. He's like, all right, cool.
And then 60, I normally do my joke.
59.
And I didn't do it this time, and it threw Brando off. Anyways, right. Hey, Brando, how's life been treating you? How's the PLO games been treating you lately?
Pretty good.
That's good. You're not a horseshoe reg anymore, though, are you?
No, I did go one time last week.
Oh, nice. How was it?
Last week. A little bit different. They are prioritizing a little bit of PLO, a little bit more. They got 11 tables running, not 10. An additional table is like the third PLO game, which
I was
going to
say they're doing 11. No, I got you. They're doing 11 games.
11 games, but usually it's like 4-2-5, 4-1-3, 2 PLO. Now it's 4-4-3, nice. Which that third game really does alleviate a lot of the pressure.
Yeah.
So I showed up. I showed up at like 9:30, and there was just a seat at the second feeder game.
Get out.
I was like, whoa.
Not to mention the fact that feeder games, for those of you who are not sure, because we don't actually do a lot of feeder games, either in Texas or in Chicago. Feeder game is a must-move game, right? So everybody goes to the feeder game first. It does exactly what it does. It feeds the main game. It keeps the main game happy, keeps the main game full. You got to start out at the feeder game. When you start adding a second feeder table that then feeds into the feeder table, which then feeds into the main game, that means your main game is just going to be juicy, juicy, juicy. It's fantastic.
All the chips either have to go home or have to go to the main game.
They just keep working their way up.
Right.
When I was at Texas Card House at the beginning of February, about a month ago, they had 3 PLO games going, 2 must moves, which was phenomenal because like so many people were moving through, like it was great. And they're hardcore. Like my only negative about playing at Texas Card House, and it's not really a negative, but it's like the one thing that kind of irked me. They don't give you like 2 hands or play to your button or anything along those lines. It's like, okay, seats open, must move means get out now.
Don't even deal them in.
Don't even deal them in. Right. Just go.
I love that.
And so many people were like, well, I don't want to go to the main game because the feeder game, like the main feeder game, it's like the middle game.
Right, the second game, yeah.
Right. Was so juicy, such a great lineup that nobody wanted to leave. There was tons of gamble going on. It was amazing. But anyways.
The feeder games generally end up better than the main games.
Sometimes.
It's weird.
Yeah. Well, because
especially
like the
middle feeder.
The first people who go to the OG game, like the first game that start them, are typically like your regs. So they're not really gamblers. They're there to like grind out two big ones.
Right, and then the
hour.
Chip stacks swell, and you kind of sometimes two biggest stacks
people
hurts the game.
Yeah, and then people start to kind of lock down
because they don't want to play 10K pots.
Right.
They want to play $1,500 pots
right.
with 500 in front of them. Pew, 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 pew.
Right.
But if they both have 5,000, and all of a sudden it's like, okay.
So it's funny you mentioned that because today's episode, we're going to talk about 3 tips to improve your PLO game. We have done 5 common beginner PLO mistakes, and it's actually one of our most popular episodes. That is episode 48. Not that any of these have any, there's no consistency within them, other than that's just the name of the episode. It's the 48th episode we did. None of these episodes, people are always like, do I have to start at episode 1? The answer is no. You could start wherever you want. It doesn't matter. Unless it says part 1 of 2, then you're cool. Just listen to whatever. You can jump around. They've all got different, and they're their own little books together. Their own little shows. Not consistent with the others.
Short of the COVID updates, they're all very time.
But those even say part 1 of, like, part 1, part 2, part 3, part 4.
So like, for, like, not time sensitive.
Yeah, don't start,
you can listen to it 4 years from now.
Right. Don't start with Brandon's epic WSOP main event run part two if you haven't listened to part one. That's just dumb. We shouldn't have to tell you that. That's podcasting tip number one. If it says one of two,
three PLO tips and one podcast tip. I like it.
Three PLO plus one podcasting tip. So since it's one of our more popular episodes, CCG and Paramount are both doing PLO tournaments on a weekly basis. So the new crazy late night for Saturday night tournament in Chicago is now a $60 straight PLO event. No high low, no big O, just straight pot limit Omaha, which is great. And I was watching the game for maybe 30 minutes last week, and I was thinking, Brando, we need to give the podcasting fans some fuel.
Tips.
Yeah, you know, a lot of them didn't make the common mistakes, which was great. We've already covered those. But these are kind of like slightly more advanced, like how to improve your play and gauge the table. So Brandon, being our resident expert, lay us on it. What's your tip number one? Are these in order? Like, are they going to go like from least to best or just kind of like whatever?
Nah, they're kind of in the middle. The first two, I forgot the third one already. Hopefully it comes to me when
you get
you took notes.
Nope.
But I honestly, yeah, I think the most important thing is the position that you are in. Position matters, obviously, in Texas Hold'em.
It does.
It matters so much more in PLO.
It's exponentially more important.
It's actually insane. And yeah. I catch myself, like, when I'm losing, like, I start to, like, realize, like, oh, I'm playing this hand out of position. Oh, man, like, I just got owned here. Oh, man, I really wish I was in position this hand instead of out of position.
And not to dumb it. And not to dumb it down, but like when people have like aces under the gun, it's like the one time I feel like people freak out in no limit, where they're like, oh man, you know, that would have been so much different if I was in a different spot. Whereas like PLO, that scenario comes up so much more.
I mean, if you have aces, kings, queens, and jacks and hold them, it really don't matter if you're under the gun, in position, out of position. That's a strong ass hand.
Right.
And you're playing it the way you play aces, kings, and queens. I mean, you might have a couple different ways you play it, but it's going to go through your book of, all right, this is how I play aces or kings, no matter what position you're in. Obviously, it's glorious when you're on the button in a tournament and people think you're stealing, but like aces under the gun and hold them. You're playing it the way you're playing it,
right,
whether you're under the gun or you're in the cutoff. Like PLO, hands completely change value under the gun. Like something is super nice and smooth and great as like Jack 10, 9, 8 with a suit. Like those are dreamy hands. If you guys don't know hand selection, like especially in a PLO cash game, Jack 10, 9, 8. I mean, that's up there with some of the non-aces hands you want to play. But Jack 10, 9, 8 with a single suit under the gun is kind of meh.
Meh.
I mean, it's fine.
It's good.
But meh.
You have to be
like,
aware
it
of the fact.
Like it turns, if you don't want to go into hold them, Jack 10, 9, 8 on the button is like ace king. Jack 10, 9, 8 under the gun is like king jack.
Right.
Still good, but now you're dominated by so much more. It like changes that much in terms of like value, where you almost just got to consider chucking it in the muck.
You kind of combined your first two tips, right? So it's the idea or the importance of position, and then also your kind of pre-flop hand choices. Is that what you were going to call it?
Yeah.
Which, I mean, you just
those
described right there.
Those are the two right most there. Fundamental things of PLO.
What is the best PLO hand you can have? I would like to hear your argument of what is the best PLO hand.
I mean, I'm on the ace-ace king-king double suited.
Really?
But a lot of people are on the ace-ace jack-10 double suited.
I'm an ace-ace jack-10. I would rather look down and see ace of diamonds, jack of diamonds, ace of spades, ten of spades. Like, that would be my nut-nut hand. That's what I want to look at. I feel like I can get more accomplished with that.
Well, so I think you hit more flops, right?
Right.
With ace,
I don't even care about
ten.
Jack 10. Jack 10 is kind of superfluous. It's more of the
but
idea.
I'm just saying you can hit like a 10-9 flop
right.
And be happy with yep. Ace Jack 10. Where if it comes 10-9-4, you have ace king king. You're like, well, that kind of sucks.
Yeah, now you're really drawn to either an ace or a king. And even then, you don't know if it's good. And that's the problem that I find. And it's something that we talked about in the beginner mistakes. People latch onto aces in Omaha and then just refuse to give them up. And it's just like, you are so beaten here by so many hands. Like, just even a shitty two pair. Like, get rid of it, you know?
So I think that kind of brings us to the point of position, where if you have a tight guy who you know they have aces and you're in position, like, you can play so well and easy against them, because every time it's like a 4, 5, 6, 6, 7, 8, king, jack, 9, like all of these connected smooth flops.
What do they call them? Wet flops? Just gonna,
yeah, they're very wet. You know, you can just outplay them. They may get stubborn and call once, but mm-hmm. like you keep the pressure on them, and they're check calling.
I'm going to do whatever I want anyways.
Go ahead.
You want to talk to the manager? I sent Brandon a really awesome TikTok of Robert De Niro, and he's trying to sell this car, and he's like, you want to talk to me? I got your manager right here. It's great. So I'm going to do that at some point this weekend if anybody asks me to see the manager. So please don't ask me to see the manager. What was they going to say? Something about,
I have no idea. You were jumping around.
Pot size betting. I also want to cover that because I think that's something, or just betting sizing. That was the third one. So I wanted to remind ourselves that's what we were talking about. But let's stick with...
Also, now you expect me to...
I just gave you your update. I interrupted you, killed your train of thought, and then now I want you to remember what we were talking about. Go ahead.
So the wet flops, I mean, it's tough to play these type of hands, like the aces and the kings and the, air quoting, good starting hands in mm-hmm. PLO. When you are out of position. So, like, you really need to be wary of... Sometimes if you have aces, kings, and queens, and you don't have nice connectivity, you don't have double-suited stuff, it's okay to just limp or just limp in hopes of somebody raises and you calling and you more set mining. Like, set mining is extremely important with the high pocket pairs and a complete no-go with the low pocket pairs. You guys shouldn't really be looking at the 4, 4, 5, 6. It's like, man, I hope I flop a 4 and an open under here.
Yeah.
Like, though, that's kind of a beginner mistake. Like, you don't really want to set mine with those little pairs.
Because the problem is so many times, if you've got fours, the chances of you're screwed no matter what. If you flop top set, that means the flop came 4, 3 deuce, which means there's so many straight cards out there that right. if you got, there's already a straight out there, plus, let's say there's two to a suit. Like, your fours are not worth very much. Now, in hold'em, flop comes 4, 3 deuce, and you're holding pocket fours, boner hitting the table. Like, you're ready to go.
Right. You're pumped.
Right.
You're just like, no 5, no ace, and I win.
Exactly.
Or no 5, no ace, no 6,
give me some,
I
like,
win.
Jacks, queens. Hope the guy doesn't have queens.
yeah, hope. I also think that, you know, say you do flop. Say it's king, 9, 4. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. Now what? Let's say you're king 9-4 and you're in position.
Even worse.
Now, we've avoided one thing of playing the hand out of position. We're in position. We flop a set. Okay, cool. We bet. We get raised. Now we're in no man's land.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
You don't know, and literally, it's because you don't know where you stand. Right.
Right.
I mean, you have no idea. Are you up against a set of nines?
Are you up against kings? Is it queen jack 10, and they got triple gutter balls,
right.
or the 3/4 wrap, as our good friend Andrew might would call it? So that's like what you want to be up against. You want to be up against wraps, or you're up against, say, top
even,
two.
Even with a wrap, let's just take that scenario. Let's say the guy's got that exact queen jack 10 and
I mean, that's
a king 9 flop.
Wrap,
what? But, yeah, it's a 3/4 wrap. What are the odds? Like, if you've got a
like
set
70-30, right?
Are you 70 or are you 30?
I mean, you're 70.
Right. Turn
but
comes.
Like, again, you know, that's kind of a bad example because that's kind of a bad wrap, but like.
Uh-huh.
Let's say it's like king jack 7 or king jack 8.
Right.
Now you can get all the cool wraps with the queen 10 nines and the stuff where they got main to Spain, which is what they call it. You get all the middle cards in between.
Main to Spain.
Anyways, yeah. Okay, let's just fast forward, keeping this example. Now the board pairs with the king. You get some action at board pairs. You now full out, you make a full house, which is like you want to turn your sets into full houses, right?
Mm-hmm.
Usually. But now you have the worst full house. And mm-hmm. if they show any aggression, you're still in no man's land. So you flop what you want, which is a set of fours, and you don't know where you're at.
Yep.
Then you turn a boat, and you still don't know where you're at.
Yep.
Like, these are just nightmare situations. And then,
best case scenario, you check.
Draw,
yeah, best case scenario, you check call, and best case scenario, you check call the whole way down, and you win a small pot, and you don't get any value out of your set of fours. Or worse,
and, right,
you,
they have
you check call, and you lose, and you get nothing.
So you saying check call, when I took some lessons in PLO, the guy's first thing was like, you never want to have mediocre hands out of position check calling because you're never going to know where you're at. And when the nuts and the board texture changes so often in PLO, which it does, it usually changes once or twice. You flopping the nuts straight doesn't really mean anything by the river. I mean, sometimes it does, but right. Oftentimes a backdoor flush draw, a front door flush draw, or the board's going to pair, or a higher straight's going to come. Like, there's right. a lot of combinations to change the texture of the board. You don't want to be check calling out of position with mediocre hands where you're like, eh, I got middle pair, I got a jack high flush draw, and I got a second nut gutter. It's like, cool, what do you want to happen? If the flush draw comes and they're continuing firing, are you happy? Answer no with a jack high flush. Right. Not happy.
Nope.
If you hit your gutter ball, which is to the second nut straight, it's like, okay, cool, I made my best possible hand. I'm still beat by all their nut wraps, and if yep. they flop the nut straight, and you're still not happy. Okay, you have a top pair of jacks, and then you turn two pair like jacks and sixes. Are you happy? I mean, maybe, but like if they're betting again, they still have all the sets and all the top twos. So like you want to avoid those situations where you're like, eh, I got a little bit of everything, but you never know where you're at.
Yeah.
Like that's how you bleed off chips. A, you just miss. B, you hit and they're beat. Or C, you hit and then they checked you on the river and it's like, well, the pot's kind of big enough. I made a jack, I checked back.
Right. You can't even bet. You can't even bet the hand that you wanted. You're wishing for a card.
If they raise, you get your card, you can't even bet it. Which is because
you're afraid of getting repopped. And then which case, then what do you do?
That's probably the, if you're going to take one thing from this entire podcast, think about if you're in that spot. Think about, man, like this is literally like I'm checking and then I'm calling because I have something and I pick up a little something more and I check and they bet again and I call. And now the river comes and it is my card. I don't even want to call. And if it isn't, I brick. And if you get in those spots, like that is the number one way to punt off and turn your hourly from positive 30 to negative 40 mm-hmm. by punting $70 like that off once an hour and switch your hourly from plus 20 to negative 50. Right there. Like, we're avoiding those spots all the time.
Yeah.
Which brings us back to our first two statements, where if we play solid starting hands and if we tend to play in position, we just generally avoid that situation.
Yes.
You can't ever check call when you're in position. You are the one they're check calling against. And then you get to put them in all those spots. And you get to do everything when you think that they flopped a straight because it's a tight guy that's leading out. But, you know, you can just call. And if the board pairs, you can take it away from them. Or if the flush gets there, you can take it away from them.
Is there part
really
of the reason
opens up your whole entire doors?
Yeah, you kind of talked about it earlier. If you flop the stone cold nuts and you have no redraws meaning you can't draw to a better hand, right? So if I flop Broadway, but I've got a something of spades and there's even one spade out there, at least I have backdoor outs, right? Like that's what you're referring to when you say backdoor outs. So like if you're playing in a cash game or a tournament, is it worth getting everything all in if it's possible? Meaning you bet, guy raises, and I've got the nuts. Should I be potting it again to get all of my money in and then just let the cards fall as they may? Or should I be thinking in the back of my mind, I could be getting free rolled by this guy? Like what kind of thought process do you have with that?
Generally, well, it depends on like your stack size and how deep you are. You don't just want to like pile in 4,000 when you flop the nuts. I mean, if you have 400, yeah, you're sticking it in there and letting it happen. But I mean, you really, like peeling a safe turn and then going for the aggression.
Ooh, I like that.
Happens much more easier. It happens much easier when you're in position.
Oh, no, much more easier. I like much more easier.
Sorry. King, queen, jack. You got ace 10. And there's $100 in the pot. Let's say the guy just goes ahead and bets 80 because we're gonna slide around to our bet sizing. Mm-hmm. Bet sizing isn't really like hold'em guys. Like you want to be betting on the higher end usually to A, deny the equity, and B, get value from your hands. Like you got to remember, this is PLO. The nut flush draw, the nut straight draw, the nut, the them flopping top set, that's usually always out there. Mm-hmm. So like you want, like if you flop the top set of queens, I mean, I know I just like I put the queen jack 10 or the king queen jack flop out there, but cancel that. And so you got the queen 8-4. You got the queen 8-4, you got top set of queens. Like, but there's two clubs out there. You want to bet big because A, you want to charge that nut flush draw to get there against you, or B, if somebody's willing to call with a jack or a 9 or an 8 or a
bottom two pair or a set of fours, right? I mean, you want to get value.
You want to get value while you can, because that turn's going to come. That's going to change everything.
If they're bad enough to play those second best hands, those silver medal hands, you got to get your money from them, because there's a lot of times PLO, you might get three people in the hand. You got the top set, middle guy's got bottom set, and the third guy's got all the draws in the world. So, like, everybody's got a different dynamic there. If you're the guy with the queens and you flop top set and you got the nutter butters right now, I mean, bet it. Bet it the whole way. Bet big.
If don't, there's $100 in the pot, don't charge them 25 when they're going to call 80.
Or certainly don't be mad if somebody calls. I hate the fact that, like, a guy bets 25, I call, and I get my nut flush on the turn, and then he bets the pot on the turn. It's like, what are you doing? You know? Like, are you representing the ace high flush here? Because I have it, so it's great. Because now there's two players in the hand, and they're all betting into me, and I got the nuts at this point. Like, I mean, that's my point of don't be upset. If you're going to try to play tricky, let me round this back up. I hate the fact that PLO players are much more straightforward when betting than hold'em. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's usually a lot more polarized. Like, they're repping it, so they either have it or they should have the blocker.
I mean, correct.
Don't really represent the nut flush draw without the ace of clubs.
Correct.
Because the odds of somebody actually having it
probably
are
got
extremely
it.
Higher.
And you're probably still going to get called down with the king high flush. It happened to me all the time in Texas. I had the nut blocker, and I was just betting it the whole way, and I had aces, and I at the end, all I got a dry aces and a blocker. That ain't good enough. His eight high spades are good. You can't. I mean, there's nothing you can do about that, but shame on him for calling the whole way down.
Hey, you want that call, because you're probably balanced to where, like, you have it 80% of the time, or you don't have it 20% of the time. So 4 out of 5 times, you're probably getting paid.
So
he
betting,
just happened to call you one time.
Betting near the top end or the high end of what your range is of betting, no matter where you're at, if you're drawing or not, do you bet your draws, Brando?
Oh, you have to bet your draws,
right?
Or else they just know you have the non-draws.
Right.
Then they get to represent the draws every time they come. Like, if you're a guy that only bets out when you got sets, well, you bet out. I'm like, cool, I'm going to call. Like, there's a PLO player we play with at CCG where, like, the guy flopped top set, and it was, like, queen 10-8, and I knew that he had jack 9. Just he bet the flop into, like, 5 people. I called with queens, and it was a flush draw on the flop. And he bet out into 5 people. I'm like, all right, well, I know I'm beat here, but I got a plan. I'm in position. Mm-hmm. I also have equity with top set. The turn came a brick, but it brought a backdoor flush draw. So now there's 2 spades and 2 hearts out there, but jack 9 is still the nuts. He pots the turn. So now I'm like, in my head, I'm like, well, now I absolutely 100% know he has the nuts.
Right.
Like, there's just nothing else he is. Like, where if it's me, I could have 2 flush draws or a set and a flush draw. But like him, I just know that he has the nuts. So I call behind again, knowing that I'm behind, but knowing that if a spade comes, if the board pair comes, or if the heart comes, he's going to check, and I'm going to pot all in on the river.
And there's a good chance he's going to fold.
And he's going to fold. I mean, unless he somehow has the nuts with a flush draw, and it would have to be a good flush draw. Like, you know, maybe not so good on the back doors, but on the front doors, it would have to be a high flush draw. So the river comes a spade, which is the front door flush, which is just dreamy. He checks, I go all in. He just shakes his head and is like, nah, couldn't fold the flush draw, huh? Bucks.
Yep. You don't
and
have
that's a way that I got to play my hand in position. But they play, they only really lead out into 5 people with the nuts. So you get to play optimally against those nuts. I had equity. If the board pairs, I actually win the pot, like, because I have the best hand. But now I was blessed with a spade coming or a heart coming, and I was also probably going to win the pot.
Right.
The secondary way. So that's something that you can do when you're in position. That's something that why, even if you have the nuts out of position, it's just so hard to play. Because I'm going to put them to that test. On hearts, spades, and board pairs, that's 65-70% of the rivers.
It's a lot.
So it's tough to win, even with the nuts. Like, he basically needs to hit a club or a diamond.
Well, he needs to fade 2 cards. But that kind of brings us back to your original point of, if you are that player, you know, 5 people in the hand, you know, you got to bet your hand, because you need to bet for value, and you don't want to just let people get there for no reason. There's nothing like, if you're first to act, you check, everybody checks behind you, and then that spade comes on the turn, and now your nuts are no longer even close to the nuts, And it's like, you lose and nothing happens.
Then you just check fold and it's like nothing happens.
Right.
But
so,
unlike Hold'em, you don't like, you don't get, you can flop the nuts on the flop in PLO and then the turn from the spade and you just like lose $40. That like rarely happens in Hold'em. You flop the nuts and Hold'em and then you end up losing, like you're losing money.
Right.
PLO, it's a little different. Your nuts can go down to the ninth nuts real quick. Also, very check quickly. Raising, people are like, oh, why don't you just check raise? A quick tidbit on that is the more people in the hand, the tighter the people that choose to bet their range is. So you would want to check raise more when there's like two or three people in the pot than five. And that's kind of reverse logic because you'd think like, oh, let me just check here. There's four other people to bet. Certainly one of them's going to bet. But as you add more people in, more people don't want to bet. Mm-hmm. It's like, I flop bottom two here, but there's still two guys behind me. Like, I'm just going to check. I don't five ways. I got bottom two.
We
got
again, I don't want to bet in that $100 pot. I bet 50 or whatever it is. And the next guy makes it, you know, 250. You know, it's just like, well, shit, I could have got out of this for nothing.
Even if he calls, you're like, okay, well, sweet. Now what do I do?
Right.
So circling back all the way back to when I said you have ace 10 and you the flop is king, queen, jack. There's $100 in the pot five ways. If you got the naked ace 10, no draws, no nothing, you flop the nuts, and the first guy bets out, I mean, first guy bets out $80, and the next guy calls 80, and it's on you. I mean, if you got $1,500, $1,600, $1,700 behind, like you don't have to just make it $500.
Mm-hmm.
Just because like you don't want to get free rolled. Or let's say it goes like 80 and then the next guy pots it to 320. Now it's on you. You got $1,200 and you got ace 10 of spades. You're kind of in a predicament. Like the odds are somebody has ace 10 with you.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want to get free rolled. So peeling off to see a safe turn is generally a good move, especially when you're deep.
I like it. I like trying to peel so that they're down to one out. So many people can justify so many things in PLO thinking I've got two shots at hitting my straight or my flush or my set or whatever, or board, the board pair, not really a set, but you know, try to get the board to pair. Whereas if you're down to just a river, I find people are much more likely to fold to a pot size bet where they're much more likely to call on the flop because in their mind, I got two shots at it. When you're down to one shot, it's like, ooh, if I don't hit it here, I'm in trouble.
I mean, their odds really, I mean, their equity gets cut in half. I mean, if they're 40% on the flop, then you just fade the turn. Now they're 20%. Cool, I'll gladly get it in 80-20. Want to get in 1,500.
Yeah, another thing I think about when I'm on the draw side, if, you know, sometimes changing up that betting size, only because if you're, you know, bet and I'm calling the whole way down, with my nut flush draw and then the spades hit or the flush hits, I always equate spades. Aren't spades more likely to hit anyways, Brandon?
Always. Number one flush to hit.
I always find that, you know, if I'm calling the whole way down, you don't ever change up that betting pattern. The problem is if your cards do hit, you're normally not going to get paid out on, right? Like the guy flopped a straight and the turns a duck and the river's that flush card. I mean, then they're going to check and you bet. And it's like you talked about when you're repping the spades and you don't have them. So many times the other player just folds. Like, you know, you got to think about the idea of not only of the protecting your hand and getting value, but also on the flip side, when you're betting your draws, it helps you out because then sometimes they will call you thinking, well, maybe he was just betting the blocker the whole way, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's so plus you get the value along the way when you're betting your draws, even if you're betting your draws and it finally gets there and then they fold.
Do you ever raise
you still
with
got
draws?
Value a lot? Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
well, you can do that. Anything in PLO, but I don't
you
want
can
it to
justify
be super,
anything in PLO. That's
can.
The idea.
Don't, yeah,
it's PLO. Anything
I mean, I think
can
that's
happen.
Like the scariest thing where everyone's like, ah, there's just so many combinations mm-hmm. and everything's happening. And it is like the wild, wild west, but you pick up the hang of like what people have in situations. Like, it's hard to explain because I think I've been playing
it's
it for
a little
so long,
easier to read,
but
people.
It's straightforward.
Yeah,
it's more straightforward because people have to, there isn't like, oh, he got super tricky here. Like, people have to protect their hand,
right?
And they have to deny equity.
Nobody's four betting equity with like a 7-4 off to just just to do it. You know, like you see on like Poker After Dark and stuff, when the, these guys at four or five bet with just absolute, like the bluffs just keep going. Like when you're watching the main event and it's like bluff one, then rebluff, and then bluffs again, then the guy fires out another bluff. You're like, how does he do that? And blah, blah, blah. It's like that shit never happens in PLO.
No, because never. People just have it so much more.
Yep. Just doesn't happen.
And
doesn't exist.
A cool thing to do in PLO, especially if you're brand new, is you can just nut pedal. The first 2 years I
you
played,
can what?
Just nut pedal. Like
what the hell is
nuts.
Nut pedal?
You know, you just pedal the nuts.
Oh, nice!
It's like an annoying tight guy that just like always has it.
Annoying tight guy.
I mean, that was me the first 3 years at the horseshoe. Like I always just had it. Like I was just getting in the nuts. Like I wasn't even playing the blockers. Like I just had it. It was like I have the ace high flush, or I have the king high flush, or I have the top set, or the middle set, I have the full wrap. Like, that's what I got. Come and get it. And people were just willing to gamble and willing to get in and willing to get in garbage. And like, you can really just sit there and just play super sexy pre-flop hands, and then flop super sexy hands, and then just don't get out of line with aces. And you can just fold aces a lot of times if you don't flop an ace or a nut flush draw. And just wait for the top sets and get it in, and it's fun.
All right, so let's wrap up our second PLO. Three tips to improve your PLO game. Step number one is what?
Play in position.
Position.
Right.
It is significantly more important in PLO than almost any other game. You need
like
position.
Just muck those blinds.
Yeah. So often,
seriously.
So many times I do exactly what we talked about. I've got 4, 4, 5 deuce, and on the big blind, I'm like, nah, fuck it. It's like $20 more. I call, you know, like somebody makes it 20 and like four guys call it. I'm closing the action. It's like, eh, whatever. I'll see it. And then I flop a four, and then I do exactly what you talked about. It's like, what was the old adage in No Limit? Like if you play mediocre hands, you hit mediocre flops. Like,
yep.
You can get away from it in No Limit, but I feel like in PLO, it's like it's so much worse. Like it's just being second best in PLO is just dumb. You just get in trouble.
I also have another, I know I'm interrupting your recap, but
right.
in addition to don't play mediocre hands out of position and check call the whole way, the other thing that I learned, oh my God, I just forgot it.
Nice. Great podcast.
Gone. Yeah. Wow. It just left me like that.
Flew your brain out.
All right, continue on. I'll find it.
Okay.
I'll find it.
Think
in
about
this
it.
Brain.
Think hard. Meditate. Position. Number two. What do we talk about?
Starting hands.
I know it sounds silly to stay, but those like suited connector hands in PLO, I feel like people always feel like they can play more. They can justify them much more often. Like, very rarely in a tournament, or even cash games a little different, but let's just say in a tournament, like if you've got 7-8, like I'm not 3-betting 7-8 of diamonds, but I feel like so many times I'm playing in a PLO game and it's like, man, the guy just 3-bet or pot size bet after a raise and he's got 6-7-8-9 double suited. Like, yes, those are great looking cards and it's a pretty hand, but it's like talking to the pretty girl at the bar. Sometimes it just doesn't pan out and I wasted my whole night trying to make this hand work, and then at the end, I got nothing. Did you like that analogy?
I did. I also remember what I was going to say.
Well, it's like you got those middle cards, and then the flop is king, jack, five. Shit, you're 7-8-9. It looks terrible.
Yeah,
know?
But even
and none
more
of your suits
so,
hit.
The flop's jack 10 or 10-9.
You're drawing
you
to the sucker end.
You think you whacked it.
Right.
Because you got a wrap, and you got a pair, and you got a 9-high flush draw. And that's fun in games and all, and that's a great hand, but, I mean, how often do you really make the nuts?
Not very often. Not in that scenario. So,
but that's whacking the flop with those lower to middle hands. You flop the low end of the wrap.
Right.
Which is why that hand plays great against one person.
Does not play well against
six people.
Yeah, no. You should just
which
fold.
Is what I was going to say. The second tip to remember is you think that, oh, I have pot odds, it's only 20 more to call, and I'm facing seven hands. You actually, it's reverse logic. The more people in, the better hand you need to play, which you'd say,
correct.
What? But it's pot odds. All I have to do is be 10% here. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, cool. You're probably like actually 16%, but you never get to realize that 16%. Like
right.
you never, it's one thing to like put it into a solver and be like, oh, yeah, the solver says I'm 18% here, and that's a good call because I'm getting 10-1 on my money. That's a great call, actually, with the math. But then it's like, how often do you really realize that 18%? There's such a small you could flop an open-ender with those low cards and just be bet out because someone there's 30 other cards out there,
right,
and somebody's got a set and they pot it. It's like, okay, cool, you flopping an open-end is really in the upper range of things you can flop there, and the calculator is going to weigh that heavily in you winning the pot a bunch of times when you flop an open-ender because you're going to get there. But you just never even get to realize it. So you really need to think about from the blinds coming along for one or two more big blinds. Like, now there's five people in here, I'm out. Like, I'm never going to flop. It has to come. I can pick the flop I want, and I'm still not happy with it.
Correct. Second best.
So just mock.
Don't be second best. Don't
just
play
mock
for the silver medal. Position, position, position. Pre-flop. What did you call it? Pre-flop.
Hand selection.
Pre-flop hand selection. I like that one.
Look,
it's good.
Just get rid of those 9-9-8-7s and the 9-9, and even like the jack 10-9-4s. Like, all four of your cards have to help each other.
All right. What's tip number three?
Tip number three is bet sizing. Got to bet way differently. Just go big. Go big.
Big on your draws. Big when you flop the nuts. Big when you got a blocker. Sell
Just go big.
Just sell it the whole way. Just bet.
You want to deny the equity. The
that was something I did notice in that PLO tournament, that five out of eight hands, eight out of eight hands, I would say nobody bet the pot once, not one time. If you're in a game and nobody's betting at all, just bet every hand. Just bet all the whole time.
Take it down.
If you're playing in a tournament, tournaments are a little different, right? Because people, maybe they're getting like the ideas going. Like, I always played a first hand at PLO. Like, I just get it in there. I just want people to know I'm wild. I'm a gunslinger. I'm coming out hot. I'm just going to start firing. I like to do my funny little tricks. Like, when I ask players, do you want action? Do you not want action? What do you want? What do you want me to do here? I'll do whatever you say. You say fold, I fold. You say call, I'll call.
I don't care what you do.
Well, then pick one, because I'm
going to
do
so
it.
So, like, going on the deny equity, again, last example. You got the top set of queens, and it's queen 8-4. The straight comes on, like, every card.
Mm-hmm.
What's a non-straight card? An ace or a king doesn't make a straight, mm-hmm, and then a deuce or a three doesn't make a straight.
Yep. Problem is, ace or king, you're worried about the other. Now the you don't have top set anymore.
Right. So you're really thinking, like, two or a three.
Yep.
Two or a three.
It's your best case scenario.
So you want to deny all the people that have, like, what about the guy that has jack 10? He's got jack 10, garbage, garbage. Okay, that's a gutter ball of the nuts. Then you got another guy who has 7-6, garbage, garbage. Okay, he's got a gutter ball of the nuts if the five comes. Well, you can deny all those individual hands have 8-10% equity against you, which is great. But, like, they'll all fold. So you could really be 60%. You can really be 60% there with a set of queens, but you can get 30% of that equity to just mock.
Right.
And then you're 90-10 against the one hand that calls. But if you're going to bet two big blinds, if you're going to bet 25 into 180, well, all of a sudden Jack 10's like, well, I got a gutter ball of the nuts, I'm going to call. And then the next guy's like, well, I'm getting a really good price here with the gutter ball, I call. Then the other guy's like, well, I got a bottom pair, a shittier gutter ball, and a backdoor flush draw, I'm going to call. And now all of a sudden you don't deny all that equity. And right, now you're 60-40 with your hand.
Mm-hmm.
And then the turn comes and Jack 10 binks it. And you're like, how do you call with a gutter ball? It's like, well you let
I just
me.
Explained it.
I just literally
Brandon
explained
it. Literally just explained it. That's how it happens. And don't do that. Don't say, how did you call? It's PLO. People can do anything. It's the Wild West.
Especially when you give them a great price.
All right. End of the episode. Here we go. Three things to remember. Position, position, position. That's literally the first three things you should learn about in PLO. The next thing you should think about is your pre-flop card selection. Think about what you're playing. Even though it's only going to cost you one more big blind to play those mediocre cards, you're just never going to get paid on your winners, and you're always worried that you're second best. Like, you just there's no good situation. There's nothing worse than causing yourself anxiety by playing PLO. I feel like that's what so many new players do. That's exactly what they do. They play mediocre cards. They flop mediocre hands, like middle set, bottom straight, shitty flush draw, and then they check call the whole way down and lose. It's just, God, I lose all my money.
It's like, they're like, forget
you
this
didn't
game.
Play, yeah, you didn't choose the correct cards to go in with. And then third is your bet sizing. Bet sizing in PLO is completely different than No Limit. There's a time to be tricky in No Limit, and I feel like there are no tricky times in PLO. Very, very rarely The only time I do tricky stuff is when it gets checked out of the river and it's like the flush and the board paired and I have like a shitty straight or two pair. Like I and it's like you do that goofy value bet at the end where it's like $800 in the pot and you bet like 80 just to like really just like, is the guy only doing it because he knows I don't have it? And he's like just trying to get me for a value $80 and I'm willing to do it just because I can't fold this pot for $80. But yet I'm thinking about folding his pot and I fold it. Like that's the only time you could be tricky. Heads up.
Yeah, the value bet bluff.
The value bluff is my absolute favorite bluff. Like it's so fucking annoying.
And then if you get called, it's like, well, it only cost me 80 to try to win 800.
Great value bluff. So that's gonna be your hidden trick number four. Position, pre-flop selection, bet sizing, and you got to occasionally throw in the value bluff. Just value bluff. It never works in Hold'em. It'll work in PLO because people will believe you. Like, I can't believe that guy called me the whole way down with backdoor spades and he got there. God, can't believe my aces are no good. They're no good. Show the aces, muck them, and then I show nothing. I don't even know what I have. It's great. Anyways, thank you for listening. As always, check us out in Texas and in Chicago. Play some PLO. It is literally the greatest game of poker. I don't know why anybody plays anything else. PLO is so much fun. You just got to get past the nervousness of like, there's so much going on. The chaos is what's so great about it. It's literally that guy from Jurassic Park, Jeff Goldblum. He's like, look, it does never goes down the same direction. Like you drop a water droplet in your hand, PLO, the flop never comes out. You just never know what's going to happen. Never. It's the best. It's more fun. It's different. You can try some different things and we'll get there. Maybe advanced PLO be coming later this summer.
There's a lot of fish too. A lot of people doing what we just said not to do.
Yep. I mean, if you can recognize those spots and play into them and do those things, like you can make money in PLO. The game's not broken. Hold'em's kind of broken. Everybody kind of feels like the bar for playing in No Limit is much higher than the kind of standard bar playing of PLO. I see so many bad plays in PLO, and I'm just like, I would never berate this guy for making this ass and backwards play.
Good job.
Because like, I want that call. I want my queens to get beat by 7-4 of diamonds, and the guy hit diamond runners. And I was like, you were drawing the whole way to what? Like, you had middle, like, you had bottom two? Like, well, what were you thinking? That's no good. You were literally drawing, you had a turn, a draw. Ooh, that's another one of my favorite terms. I have to turn a draw. Anyways, thanks for listening. Brandon, lead us out.
Farewell, everybody. Get some PLO action in this week.
Play some PLO. Let's go. Brandon and I were thinking about playing the PLO main event.
CCG.
Oh, yeah, that's great. We were jokingly saying we should just skip the regular main event and just go play the PLO main event, the 10K PLO, but we've committed.
Definitely have a better chance.
I do. I'm never gonna make the money in the main event, but I got to play it one time just to play it. I think I could make the money in PLO.
I do too.
Maybe I will switch. I don't know. We'll see how
it goes. Let's play both.
We're going to start a GoFundMe page for Ken's PLO tournament package.
Wow, I thought we'd get it.
It probably would. Thank you for listening. We will see you this weekend. Have fun, everybody. Bye.
Bye.